Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It is a Thursday football tonight, baseball NBA last night, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, right here on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. My favorite segment of the week, 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell. If you bet football or in fantasy football leagues or just love to get smarter, it is our NFL meat sandwich. 15 minutes of great with Greg Cosell on a Thursday in The Herd 1 hour from now. Joy is a little down in the dumps today because of what transpired last night. It's not great.
The heat is not on, Colin.
Not right now, no.
That cold here.
Yeah, it doesn't quite feel.
That's what it felt like last night.
Well, they say, Joy, you should never overreact to game one of a series. It's easier in baseball because sometimes you just have a great pitcher and nobody can hit him. But in basketball, you know, first game of a series, Spoelstra's a great coach. He'll make changes. But there are two big issues for the Miami Heat, and I don't see these two issues changing. One, they're falling apart. Dragic is hurt. And number two is, this is a bad matchup. Let's just start with Bam Adebayo, Miami. He's a nice young player, averaged 16-10 in the regular season. Against Boston, he looks like a great player. He averaged 22 a game. This is who he is. No, that's who he is against Boston guarding Daniel Tice, where he can concentrate and be much more profound and dynamic on the offensive end because he doesn't have much of a defensive assignment. Now Bam has to guard AD and occasionally LeBron, which will mean more fouls, sap more energy, and he will not be the offensive player he was in the Boston series. This matchup is not changing. He's a kid. He's 23. LeBron and AD are not kids. They're going to go after him the entire series and should, because it will take his offense away. This is a problem. The Lakers' front line is huge. 6'10 AD, 6'10 Dwight Howard, 6'9 LeBron. They can bring in JaVale McGee. They are big and long and powerful and veterans. Miami's front line is 6'7 Duncan Robinson, who's a perimeter player, 6'6 Jay Crowder, and 6'9 Bam, who's a baby. They're going to have to play guys they don't necessarily want to play in this series. This matchup issue, Bam is a good young player. He averaged 16 a game. That's what he is. 22 against the Celtics, a very small team that scores most of their points on the wing and in the backcourt, is a different matchup. Boston was a very good matchup. This is a very bad matchup for the Heat and Bam. Here's the other thing. Dragic is now hurt. Oh, brother. And Jimmy Butler can get you 30 a night, but you're going to have to score 110 to 115 to win this series. Let's make it a math problem. Take out Jimmy's 30. Who's giving you the other 80? Because Bam's not dropping 22 a night in this series. He'll be down to 15, 16, 17 because his defensive assignments are going to be so rigorous. Can you imagine waking up? Who are you guarding tonight? LeBron and AD, and you're 23. So the issue is, Dragic is hurt, so you're not getting offense there. Bam's defensive assignments are tougher. You're not going to get huge offensive consistent output there. You need Tyler Hero to play, and he is a defensive liability. You don't have a choice now. You need threes. You need somebody that can shoot. Tyler Hero's got to play because he's one of the great young shooters in the game. I mean, there are times he looks like Steph. I'm not saying he's that, but he's a great young shooter, and he's a defensive liability. Lakers go right after him. Lakers are a bunch of old veteran players. They know the game. They know the sport. They don't have a lot of young players. They're going to go right after Tyler Hero. When he's on the floor, he is a defensive problem. But they've got to play him. It's a math problem. Jimmy Butler's giving you 25 to 30. Hopefully he doesn't have an off night. Where are you getting your points? You're not going to get them from Bam like Boston. You're not getting them from Dragic. He was invisible. Now he's hurt. You got to get him from Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, and both are defensive liabilities, especially Tyler. But you got to pick your poison here. You got to put him in, cross your fingers he hits his threes, and cross your fingers who he's guarding is not hot. Now, I don't think the Lakers will shoot like they did in the first half. Last night was one of those nights. The Lakers just, and this is a Laker team, we can never figure out who's going to score beyond LeBron and AD. And last night, everybody was hitting. KCP was hitting. Caruso was hitting. Danny Green was hitting. But that you got some issues here where it is a matchup problem. I mean, we watched Kansas City and Baltimore play on Monday. It's a matchup problem for Baltimore. It happens. You know, the NBA, it's like fights. Mike Tyson was a bad fit with Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield could take a punch. He could play the angles on Mike. He could deliver punches with Mike. He would get inside Mike Tyson. They could fight five times. Evander Holyfield was a bad matchup for Mike Tyson. Baltimore, Kansas City's a bad matchup for him. Boston and Miami, Boston is so small, it allowed Bam, a young player, to flourish. Defensive assignments weren't that rigorous. Good luck waking up in the morning if you're 23 years old having to guard AD and LeBron. And Frank Vogel saw it. And by the way, LeBron saw it after the game. He said, I can't wait. I'll just listen to what LeBron said after.
I think you can learn so much more from a win than you can in a loss. And I can't wait to get for tomorrow for us to get back together and watch the film and see ways we can be better.
Just keep pounding the ball to Anthony Davis. Force Bam to have to guard Anthony and LeBron. It'll suck points away from his offensive game, and it's a problem. Here's the other advantage to the Lakers. I mean, when you watch like that kind of dominating performance, apathy sets in, right? Like the Lakers have to convince themselves for the next three games they play, we got to be mentally focused tonight or we cannot win. And now Dragic is hurt, and that plays with your head. Like, what can they do? But there's not going to be apathy in this series because the Lakers want to get the hell out of the bubble. You're not going to have your typical apathy in a series where you win the first two games, you go on the road, you mailed it. Lakers want to go home. Lakers are an old team. Lakers guys are married. Lakers guys got kids. There's going to be no apathy here. They want to get the hell out of the bubble, go back to Los Angeles, to their cribs in L.A. with beach views and their girlfriends, their wives, their family. I don't see a sense of an apathy, which is always a problem when you have a game one blowout, is you have to now convince the veteran team, these guys are really good. That was an aberration. I guarantee you the Heat. Now, I don't think the Lakers will shoot that well. I think Spoelstra's a great coach. I still think Miami wins a game or so in this series. But the matchups and now the mounting injuries, I think Miami's in trouble. I think they're in trouble. All right. So it's going to be a very good NFL weekend. It starts tonight. Sam Darnold. I'll take the Jets, I think, over Denver. I'll watch it. I mean, the NFL's got so much power. I'm going to watch two bad teams play. I think the Jets, Darnold, probably find a way to win narrowly, but it'll be really ugly football. One of the more entertaining games this weekend is going to be Cleveland against Dallas. This is Baker Mayfield, who's been, to say the least, a huge disappointment as a number one on the biggest stage, playing in front of family and friends down in Texas. And Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, who frankly could be 0-3. They also could be 3-0, maybe 2-1. Baker Mayfield says, I am up for any kind of game we have to play.
When it comes down to it, we're playing the Cowboys defense. And, you know, we have to do whatever it takes to win. And if that is a shootout, then great. Then if it's another game where we have to control the clock, then we'll do that. So whatever it takes to win.
A no. If it is a shootout, it is not great. And this is going to be interesting for Baker Mayfield this weekend. He's going back home. Got dozens of friends and family in a stadium who played some high school and college football. He wants to show off a little. Baker's got a little ego. Baker wants to show the world, I can go toe-to-toe with Dak. Baker, take a deep breath. We now have a clear and inarguable truth about Baker Mayfield. You can no longer argue it. The less Baker, the more they win. The Cleveland Browns are 7-1 with Baker Mayfield when they throw 26 or fewer times and he manages the offense. Don't ask a lot from him. Let him manage it, hand it off, and make a handful of big throws. They are 8-17. They're a bad, bad football team when they ask Baker to throw 27 or more. You can no longer argue it. That's through multiple coaches. This GM and this head coach in Cleveland are brand new and have no loyalty to Baker. And they have discovered, to their credit, very quickly, more Baker, less winning. Less Baker, more winning. He cannot carry a film. He's not a lead. He can be Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter. He ain't De Niro. First couple of years, everybody, number one pick. I know it's discouraging. I know it's disappointing. But I don't think it is. I think what's very encouraging for Cleveland and why I think they're going to win a lot of games this year, you know, Hollywood struggles with this. Actors in their early 20s. Can Shia LaBeouf be a lead? He does movies. What's the box office? You know, you find out. Some actors can be leads. Some actors are good two and threes. Baker's not a lead. And that's disappointing when you're a number one pick. But it's not disappointing if the new GM and the new coach can identify it and say, we can still get to the playoffs. We may not beat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. We can get to the playoffs with this, and I think they can. This is not a shootout weekend. I know your family's going to be there and your friends. Your frat boys are going to be there, all the Sooner fans. I get it. This team, Cleveland, if they run it 37 times, can beat the Dallas Cowboys. If it becomes a shootout, Baker will make too many mistakes. It's no longer arguable. 7-1 when he doesn't throw much. 8-17 when he throws too much. I like Dallas in a good game, and I actually do hope Baker understands what he is, and we get a great, great football game, because it's not a great schedule this weekend of classic matchups.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jeff Van Gundy is an excellent broadcaster, really good, very good coach. People are rumored he's going to go to the Clippers. But, you know, there's always the LeBron and Michael debate, and, you know, people tend to romanticize the past. So, you know, a lot of people think, you know, everything was better in the 90s. I don't happen to be one of those people. I think NBA players are much better now. Everybody can shoot. You know, back you go back to the 80s and 90s, you'd have five guys on a roster that couldn't shoot, two or three starters that couldn't shoot. Everybody now can shoot. Seven-footers can shoot. The game's much more skilled. I mean, Anthony Davis is 6'10". He can ball handle. He can shoot. He can defend. I mean, it used to be guys like Anthony Davis were back to the basket. You couldn't run the floor, couldn't put the ball on the floor, couldn't beat anybody off the dribble, couldn't shoot. The league's never been better. LeBron's beating unbelievably talented players and making them all look small. But the game was also very physical back then. It was a grab, push, hand check league, and people argue that Michael's better and this and that. But you think LeBron would have struggled? With the hand check, he's 6'9", 250 with a 3% body fat. He'd have done just fine in any era. Michael would have done very good in this era. Great players are great players. Wilt Chamberlain would have been good in this era. Kareem would have been good in the 50s or now. Great is great. But Jeff Van Gundy made a real point about the whole LeBron-MJ debate.
I don't like the whole comparison thing about who's better, but I would say at the end of his career, LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're going to be able to make a case that one of them, and I would say LeBron James, is going to have the best career. Does that mean he's the best player? That's up for anybody else to debate. I mean, you're talking about a career longevity-wise that's unparalleled other than Kareem.
I mean, I watch Kareem. I'm old enough, I watched Kareem at the very end. He was hobbling up and down the floor. You still couldn't stop the skyhook. There was a play before half. It didn't count with LeBron James. Let's roll the tape. This looks like a pitcher that's still throwing 99 miles an hour. It looks like a running back that's still rushing for 1,700 yards. It didn't count, but look at LeBron. Year 17. Good hell. What is that? It's not close. Kareem and MJ were broken down. LeBron's not even close to the end of his career. He's got three. He'll start next year as the best player in the league. And if he's not, he's two. So it's a whole different ballgame. Portland, Houston, and Denver, all three series. And by the way, this one too. What's the big question? Who can guard LeBron? Nobody on Portland could. Nobody on Houston could. Nobody on Denver could. And nobody. Jimmy Butler can give it a run, but you can't have Jimmy Butler guarding him for 38 minutes. Jimmy Butler's got to work. He's going to be one of your only scorers for Miami. Who can guard LeBron? I mean, that is the question now. This is he's the best player now. He'll be the best player at the start of next year. And the one thing is that LeBron is more adaptable than Michael. Michael was the killer and the scorer, but he worked with one great teammate and one great coach. LeBron's worked with Bosch and Kyrie and D. Wade and Kevin Love and Anthony Davis. And LeBron's much more adaptable. He's much less rigid. He's gotten five head coaches to the finals. He's worked with multiple systems and multiple teammates and multiple old guys in multiple cities. Michael, think about it this. If they were not basketball players, if LeBron and Michael were CEOs, Michael would be the CEO that came to a company, rebuilt it, and hit it out of the park, then got burned out and quit. Came back and did it again at the same company. Then left and could never turn around another dysfunctional company, the Wizards. LeBron would be the CEO that entered a company, built it up, but felt he didn't have the personnel to really crush it. Went to Miami, crushed that company. Went back to the old company he couldn't win a title with, crushed that company. Moves to LA, crushes that company. No quitting, no taking time off. Different coaches, different employees, different systems, different infrastructures. Boom, boom, boom. It's more impressive what LeBron's doing. If you took the basketball out and just said they're both CEOs, one guy quit, one guy couldn't work without a head coach and without a co-star. LeBron's done it with Wade and Bosch and Love and Kyrie and Anthony Davis. Guards and forwards and bigs and young and old and flaky and, I mean, everybody. It's just, it's a more impressive career. You can argue best player at their prime. Michael's probably the most dynamic individual player I've ever seen in my life in the prime of his career, his great 6 years. I would never deny that. Michael's great. But adaptable, the ability to work multiple level systems coaches, I don't think there's anything close to LeBron. And that play at the end of the half, I just laugh watching it. I'm like, that's a guy still throwing 99 on the corner. That's not a pitcher. That's 99 miles an hour if you're a Major League Baseball pitcher. In the series, that is running for 1,600 yards as a running back in the Super Bowl. Like, he's not close. He is not even close to the end of his career.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I thought it was interesting. Josh McDaniels, the very, very talented offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots, was talking about Cam Newton. And I think Cam Newton understood the urgency of this situation. There were not a lot of teams that wanted him, and there were two potential outcomes. Don't embrace New England's system, and your career could mostly be over. The big paydays are over. Or embrace it, play well, win, and potentially get a big payday after it. And I think Cam Newton understood the urgency of it. Credit to him, and Josh McDaniels talked about that.
I've been super impressed with his humility. This guy has, and he's accomplished a lot in his career, and being 10 years in the league and doing all the things he's done and coming here and having no familiarity with our coaching style or our system or the way we do things. I have been incredibly impressed with the way he's embraced it.
And I do think Cam deserves a lot of credit here. He understood there were multiple outcomes here. One really good, big payday coming up. One, you may be limited. Some people did. There's too many good young quarterbacks. He comes in, doesn't embrace it. He's out. But here's what I'm hearing a lot of now. My least favorite trait from the media. I cannot believe the league let Belichick have Cam. Oh, you're all experts now. That is implying two things. That had Cam gone to Detroit or Washington or the Chargers, it would have worked out this well. Tom Brady's career wouldn't have been Tom Brady's career in Detroit or Cincinnati. You're implying that it would have looked just like this anywhere and that Belichick and McDaniels aren't special. If you think that, get another job. They change the history of football. They change Brady's career. Randy Moss was a mess, went to there, flourished, left, didn't do well. I mean, Randy Moss is an all-time great. He had like 4-3 years late in his career. He was great. This place. They take big personalities. They just take anything on, and it almost always works. So the idea that Cam would have been this Cam in Detroit or the Chargers or any other team, stop it. Secondly, then you're also implying that the previous 4 years, there weren't legitimate questions about Cam. Ron Rivera didn't want him. He was hurt a lot. His last 8 starts, he was 0-8 with more picks than interceptions. He was uneven, at times moody, sometimes distracted. Those were all legitimate questions. We know we judge quarterbacks more harshly than we do receivers and linebackers and offensive guards. We expect them to be presidential, quarterbackial. And sometimes Cam played with flair and was a little distracted. He didn't always elevate Carolina players offensively. Those were real legitimate questions. If you go 0-8 with more picks than interceptions in your last 8 start and your head coach Ron Rivera, who's respected around the league, goes and gets your backup and not you, those are legitimate questions that were year after year after year. It's a 500 quarterback post-Super Bowl. So let's not imply those two things. The questions about him were real, And Belichick and Josh McDaniels have given him a perfect home with a great defense. He doesn't have to win shootouts. Very good offensive line, solid running backs, a great ecosystem, and mostly some winnable games in a mostly dysfunctional division outside of Buffalo now. So I think it's great. I think I've said this before. I like stories. Good or bad, I like stories. The NBA has always been a league. It's a great story league. I think the NFL in the last 2 years has surpassed the NBA in terms of stories. I always liked watching the NFL more, but it was very corporate. Sometimes it was very kind of staid and suppressed. The league's better when Cam's in it and healthy. The good Cam. The early Cam and this Cam, league's better. What, you think it'd be better if Jared Stidham started? It's not as interesting. You know, like, to struggle and be interesting, you usually have to be like Baker or Burrow, where you've got a lot of hype and a lot of talk and you're new and I haven't seen much. And oh my God, I watched Baker early and Burrow now, and they're not great and the teams aren't good. But by and large, I watch the teams with good quarterbacks who win a bunch of games. The early Cam in this Cam is good for the league. But let's not imply that it would have just turned out like this without Belichick and Josh. They changed Tom Brady. They changed the history of the league. I mean, literally, it's the only 20-year dynasty in the history of the sport. All other dynasties, like the Dallas and 49ers dynasty, look small, look tiny compared to this.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
A man who has worked for 41 years at NFL Films, just my favorite 12, 15 minutes of the week, Greg Cosell is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. All right, so we'll revisit a question that I asked you last week, but we have another game and more tape for you, Greg. So let's just revisit. We know Carson Wentz is struggling. Same issues against Cincinnati, in your opinion?
Well, I think right now he's fighting it mentally, Colin. I think what you're seeing is a quarterback that is just not seeing it as clearly as he should. His recognition of what he's looking at is not quite as clean. So his elimination of what's not there and his isolation of what is there is not as quick as it needs to be. He's clearly having some ball placement issues. But you do see that moments. The touchdown he threw to Ward was a big-time play because of what he did recognize. So, you know, I've made this analogy numerous times talking to different people this week. To me, it's almost like a hitter in baseball. When you're red hot, it doesn't matter who the pitcher is. The ball looks like a beach ball. When you're in a slump, it doesn't matter who the pitcher is. The ball looks like a BB. He's fighting it right now. And all you can do is work through that.
Yeah. Speaking of working through it, so I've watched every snap of Tom Brady. I think I mentioned this last week. He's never had this many options. He didn't have preseason. In a weird way, Chris Godwin being out for another week is an interesting element where maybe he gets to work more with Evans and more with the tight ends and more with Scotty Miller. So what are you seeing, Tom, week to week so far?
I think it's been a little up and down. There's been moments where you say, hey, that's Tom Brady. Great sense of timing and rhythm. I thought he made an unbelievable throw 2 weeks ago to Mike Evans for 50 yards against cover two. Just classic Brady timing, touch, precise ball placement. You see that. But then I think you see some other throws where maybe he's just not quite as comfortable. Godwin will be out again this week. So the receiving core, when they go to three wide, will likely be Evans, Watson, Miller. Maybe the rookie Tyler Johnson will get more snaps. So I still think he's working through that because he's such a mechanically sound, rhythmic timing player. It's all about repetitive mechanics, doing the same thing over and over and over again. Maybe he and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees, maybe there's no one like that who's played, but that's the way Tom Brady is.
Okay, so one player, I talked to a scout last night in the NFL, and he said, Colin, privately, if you ask some GMs this morning after 3 weeks in the year about Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, I think there'd be some that would move to Josh Allen's side because we knew he had a big arm, we knew he was athletic. His accuracy now, I mean, you got to give Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, some credit, Greg. He has made a jump I didn't know he could make. What does the film say on Josh Allen?
Well, there's still a little bit of the Josh Allen experience, Colin. You know, it's like the Jimi Hendrix experience, I guess. there's no question at times there's still a frenetic nature to his game. I think he'll always be like that. I think the goal with him is as he gets more experience, you try to channel that a little. He probably channels it on his own. But he is a big physical kid who can make throws. He's been consistently more accurate. He's been better within structure. They're a team that does like to push the ball down the field, so that fits his style. You know, I remember when I came out there a number of years ago and he had just finished his junior year in college, and you and I talked, and I said, you got to keep your eye on Josh Allen. This kid's going to be a top 10 pick. And he's just so physically gifted, and they're really doing a good job with him. I think you'll see them cut down on his design runs. They'll use it in strategic tactical moments, but it won't be the same as a Lamar Jackson. Now, he's a better thrower than a Lamar Jackson, just a pure thrower of the football.
Yeah. So I want to ask two questions on that Monday night debacle. Let's start with this. What happened to Baltimore's defense? They were often... It felt like they were the alignment right. was wrong. There were too many blown coverage. What was wrong with Baltimore's defense?
Well, can I answer it this way, if you don't mind?
Sure.
I think the bigger question, because Patrick Mahomes is pretty much going to put up 30 on anybody. Right. I don't think it's a surprise when Kansas City scores 30, correct?
Right.
I don't think we're surprised by that. The bigger surprise, I think, was the fact that Baltimore's offense looked a little discombobulated.
Yeah.
And I think what Steve Spagnuolo did was just absolutely brilliant. Now, don't forget, he does have in his back pocket the fact that he knows his offense will likely put up 30-plus. But he came out, and here's what he said on third down and other downs. He said, we're going to play press man, we're going to blitz, and we're going to make the receivers have to win one-on-one, and we're going to have to make Lamar make precise ball placement throws to beat us. That's the challenge. Can you guys accept it? Because that's what you're going to have to do to beat us. And you know what? If Lamar, you make a couple of great runaround plays, great. More power to you. I don't think you can do enough of that to score 35. And that's what they did. Now, I'm not a big blueprint guy, Colin, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you, well, every team's going to do that. It depends on your team
right.
and the fact that the Chiefs can obviously score a lot of points. Not every team can do that. But we'll see. That the Baltimore offense, as I've told you many times, the foundational and philosophical structure is Lamar Jackson as a runner. That's where it begins. Everything works off of that. I think he's an improving thrower. But I don't think they want – they're telling you how they want to play, by the way. This is not me. They're telling you. I don't think they want to be in a situation where he's a drop-back quarterback just yet. He may get there, but not just yet.
41 years watching NFL films. Greg Cosell joining us. All right, so I think I think self-identifying your limitations is really important in this league and
yeah.
your strengths. It's I think Baker Mayfield can win a bunch of games throwing it 23 times. He is 7-1 throwing 26 or fewer. He's 8-17 throwing 27 or more. I like what I see from Cleveland, and I think Kevin Stefanski's identified very early. We don't think he's a number one pick. Somebody else did that. But we do think there's a structure in which he can win. It looks like it's fairly clear what Cleveland thinks of Baker and their offense.
Yeah, and I think that's a Stefanski belief anyway. In some ways, they're like Tennessee. I think you have two teams that they start with the run game. That's exactly how Cleveland starts. And by the way, they've expanded the run game. Everyone thought of Stefanski, based on his history, as a zone run game guy. You've seen a lot more of what we call gap scheme, pulling guards this year. They've been really good at it. I think that will be their approach. Now, the main issue with an approach like that is if you do get behind and you do have to throw the ball. Now, I think Baker is capable. He's a very good thrower. Now, there's other things that he probably has to work through in order to become a much higher level quarterback overall. But this is the way they want to play. Now, much of that then depends on your defense. They're going to go into Dallas this week. Dallas puts up a lot of points. If they get into a shootout, that profile changes. You can't throw it 23 times and have your backs run it 35 times. The profile has to change by necessity. So much depends on the ability of their defense to keep games together so that they can play offensively the way they really want to play.
It's interesting. I think the Chicago Bears story for 3 years has been a story of a very good coach, Matt Nagy, very clever, who was limited by his GM, who I don't love, and his quarterback. Now they're 3-0, and they've got Nick Foles, who, let it rip, Nick, has his moments.
Yep.
Do you think differently this morning watching the Bears at 3-0 with this quarterback than Trubisky? Do you think it's a more legit 3-0, a more legit team going forward in that division?
Well, I think Foles gives you more consistency on a play-to-play, quarter-to-quarter, game-to-game basis. I think if, when you talk to coaches in the league, they'll tell you that Foles has limitations. Everyone knows what they are, but he's more consistent, as I said, just play-to-play. And I think that Nick knows where he's going with the football. He's willing to turn it loose. I think he's unfazed by moments. He's played in big moments, and yeah, just his demeanor, you can tell it's just the next play to him. And I think he's tough in the pocket. And then I think that always means something to teammates when a quarterback stands in there and takes hits like he did on the game winning touchdown last week versus Cover Zero when he took a big shot and made the throw. So I think he gives you a better feel, a better energy throughout your offense, that there'll be greater consistency to what you're trying to get done.
All right, let's go to Aaron Rodgers. First couple of weeks, I don't like Minnesota's personnel defensively as much as they did a couple years ago, and then they beat the Lions, and I'm like, whatever. But then I'm watching him, even without a Devontae Adams against New Orleans, and I'm like, okay, this is next level. Aaron's very much comfortable. I also think last year, as a rookie coach, LaFleur was very good off the script, on script. They were not a very good second half team last year. Most young coaches are good on the script, but they don't. Pete Carroll and Belichick, those guys, Andy Reid, adjustment coaches too. I think they become a much better second half team, which I think is some credit to a young coach growing. So that's part of what I see. But I want you to talk about Aaron, the Packers, and what the film says.
Well, I think they're doing some really good things offensively. I think you're seeing some more play action, some more play action boot. They're getting involved a lot more with the misdirection element, the deception element, because right now defenders, you try to grab their eyes, make them think they see something that they don't see. You know, on defense, if you're a step late, you're beaten. I think they're doing a really nice job with that. You know, it's really interesting, and we're going to show this play in a moment, but it's really interesting when you talk about receivers who are not speed receivers, when they can get on top of the defense because the play design allows them to do that. I mean, Rodgers did not have Devonta Adams last week, who, by the way, just as an aside, I think Devonta Adams is absolutely special. Yes. I watched him this summer, every one of his targets and many other plays, and he is a phenomenal route runner. He is so much fun to watch, and he'll be back soon, but you know, the play I'm going to show, and we can run it right now because this was from last week. So when you see this play, this was a 48-yarder to Alan Lazard. And here's the play action boot that I was speaking about, what they're doing more of. But this is such a great example of how one thing by a defense can cause problems. So you see Rodgers now, he's under center here, and this will be play action boot to the left, which you don't see a lot. Tough throws when you're booting to your left. There's Alan Lazard. Notice the reduced split. He's tight to the formation. He's going to run a deep sail route. So now there's two defenders to keep an eye on. It's the corner Lattimore and the safety Jenkins. We mentioned the play action boot away from them. Watch how they take just two steps toward that. We slowed it down because that's all it takes, is two steps toward that. And now look what happens. Lazard can get on top of those guys. It doesn't look like he's on top now, but he's both Jenkins and Lattimore, and it's ultimately Lattimore's play here where the ball's thrown. He's beaten, and Lattimore's way faster than Lazard, but just two steps because of the play-action boot, because the run-action away, and he is beaten. And this is just what they're doing, really. And by the way, the throw is ridiculous. That's 53 yards in the air going to his left. We kind of lose sight of how ridiculous a throw that is. So, you know, I think that LaFleur is doing a great job. I think Rodgers has settled into this offense. I think he's clearly more comfortable. I think you can see that just in his body language. They're a pretty complete team right now.
Yeah, they are. No, I love it. And Devonta Adams is ridiculous. I mean, I need to watch more Fresno State football games because I don't remember him in college, but he is just, you watch him, he and DeAndre Hopkins, I'm not sure there's a corner that can guard him. Seriously.
Adams is a phenomenal route. He just understands how to run routes.
Greg, great seeing you. Thank you so much.
All right, Colin, appreciate it. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Decade in the NBA, finals in four straight years. He's a big guy. He's a big fella. And when I watched that game last night, the Lakers' size was such a problem for Miami. It felt like the series was over, and he is joining us now live via the Cowher Global Satellite Network. Were you surprised by how dominant the Lakers were, Tristan?
Yeah, most definitely. I know going into this series, I knew that AD had to be a big factor, but I didn't realize, you know, with Dwight Howard and AD on the court against Bam and Jay Crowder, I was like, man, this is like men versus boys. Like, you know, Dwight Howard's dumping it off, getting assists, which I've never seen Dwight Howard really do, to AD just playing big for big. It was just like varsity versus JV. It was just like, look, he's just getting and ones, offensive rebounds, like, Lord Jesus.
Yeah. Now you've been in enough finals. Did you ever play at a game one, maybe get beat badly or win big? And like, what do you think the Heat are saying today?
I think it's very similar to in 2018 when we got swept by Golden State. We had a lot of fresh faces, guys that have never been to the finals. And that game when LeBron's charge turned to a block, which I never seen happen before ever in NBA history. You know, that game we lost, I think for some guys on our team that haven't been to the final, I think mentally it kind of, you know, set our team back. And I feel like for Miami, like this was their game that they needed to win, because I think confidence-wise, these guys that are young and experienced, they need a game like this to like feel like, okay, we belong here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we beat Milwaukee, we beat Boston, but like, you know, when you're warming up and you see LeBron and AD dunking and layup lines, you're like, you know, you're intimidated. It's just the natural reaction. So last night definitely showed, like, you know, it was like, you know, the A team versus the B team, you know?
What do you think LeBron says? I think apathy can be a real thing when you have a dominant team. LeBron's smart. He watches that game and he thinks Bam Adebayo is not going to stop AD, and he knows nobody's going to stop him. What do you think LeBron is saying last night and this morning?
Definitely keep the foot on the gas. I think one thing about this Miami ball club and the organization that's rambling with Pat Riley and Spoelstra is that, you know, they're not going to give up. You know, even though they might not have as much talent, guys might fall because of injury, they're going to keep playing hard for 48 minutes. And LeBron knows that because he's been there. He knows Spoelstra. He knows what Spoelstra is saying to those guys. So for LeBron, it's like, you know, we're not taking our foot off the gas. You know, we got to continue attacking these guys. They're smaller than us. Attack the rebound. AD, continue to be 25 and 15. Dwight, when you're out there, get offensive rebound. Do things that don't show up in the stat sheet, but you're still impacting the game. So this is just a veteran ball club that understands, but especially with LeBron, and he knows what's on the line. He's locked in, and he's keeping that car on a supercharge.
You know, LeBron said this was the most challenging playoffs of his life in the bubble. I'm sure you've talked to some of your friends in the league and some of the Lakers. Kind of tell my audience what you're going through as an older player for the last 3 months in Florida in this bubble.
Yeah, no, it's the bubble is definitely, especially for veteran players, it's much more difficult, especially for a guy like LeBron. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he's got a big family. He's got wife, kids. He has his routine. You know, he's making movies. He's a big routine guy. So for him being in LA and being able to get his treatment and being with his family and chef, like all that stuff, even for like other players, like that stuff is kind of like what helps you get ready for the game. So for him not being able to have that on a daily basis, it's definitely frustrating and tough. But if you ask a guy like, you know, Tyler Herro or some other young guys that are 19, 20, you know, they're just used to this. You know, this is like AAU where it's like, hotel, eat food in the lounge, go back to your room, play video games. You know, for them, they really don't have much else going on. So for a younger guy, it's like, hey, man, I was just doing this, like, you know, 8 months ago in college at Kentucky. But for a guy like LeBron, you know, this is definitely difficult, especially, you know, the hotel room, no matter how big your suite is, but every day you're there longer, the room just gets smaller and smaller, and it just drives you crazy.
It certainly does. I have said I'm surprised that LeBron and AD, the first 2 weeks, it just clicked. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised?
No, not at all. I think what makes this duo different than the other teams in the league compared to, you know, the Russell Westbrook and James Harden or Ben and Embiid, I think with this one is that, first of all, LeBron shoots it better now in his career, which opens up a lot for AD to work around on the left block and work in the paint, which AD wants to do. And for LeBron, you know, he's basically the point guard. So he knows exactly, you know, where AD wants it, how to get AD going. If you watch the games, you know, LeBron should get AD going early. You feed the beast early, you get him going, and LeBron can get his numbers. He knows he can get his numbers. He knows how he can get himself going. So I think that's why it's worked so well compared to, like, you know, with Embiid and Ben, you know, they both play in the paint. With Russell Westbrook and James Harden, they're both ball dominant. So it's tough because guys kind of have to give up a little bit, you know. And even with LeBron and D-Wade, they went through some growing pains because they both are, like, you know, point guards on the floor and they both have the ball in their hand. But with AD and LeBron, it's like Shaq and Kobe. Here, I'm going to feed the big fella. You go to work. If they double team you, kick it out to me. I trust my three-point shot, or come in a pick and roll. Let me attack the rim and get a two-on-one action.
You know, it's interesting. An interesting player last night. He was very good early as Tyler Hero. So with Goran Dragic hurt, we'll find out more with Joy Taylor and Herdline News. But with him hurt, you don't have many options now. You got to pick, you know, Tyler Hero's a problem defensively, but you need his scoring because outside of Jimmy Butler now, you just need his scoring. And Bam's got to play such good defense in this series. That's going to sap some energy from him on the offensive end. But if you were the Lakers and you knew the Heat had to play Tyler Hero 30 minutes because they need his offense so desperately, what would you do if you were Frank Vogel?
If I'm Frank Vogel, first play the game, if I'm not giving it to AD, I'm running a pick and roll. Whoever Tyler Hero's guarding, come set a pick and roll. So he's probably going to be guarding Danny Green. So if I'm LeBron, come up top Danny Green, set this screen, let me get an ISO against Tyler Hero. You know, at the end of the day, Spoelstra knows that he needs scoring. So he's going to have to sacrifice some defense. But with Tyler Hero in the game, you know, you're going to have to give up the defense. So if I'm Frank Vogel, we're going to attack Tyler Hero every time. We're going to put him in every pick and roll. And with him having to guard on the offensive end, maybe his legs might be tired. He might, you know, some of his shots might be short. So, you know, Tyler Hero, get them puppies ready because, you know, you have to play both ends. And, you know, you want to be a good player in this league, you have to do on both ends. So you got to be ready.
You know, it's interesting, Tristan Thompson joining us, is that the bubble, COVID, actually gave LeBron's legs about 4 months off. I think he's the freshest he's been in years. I mean, what does it look like to you?
No, he looks fresh. You saw at the end of the at halftime when Kuzma threw up that floater, he did like a reverse dunk. I said, Lord, I can't even do that if I warm up for 30 minutes. So I think this COVID thing was the best for LeBron's legs to keep him fresh. And you see it out there. He's shooting threes. He's playing 40 minutes. He's dunking. He's playing on both ends. He might sprain an ankle and dunk the next play, which is crazy and unheard of. But I think this was like a blessing in the sky for him.
Finally, Kyrie Irving had a recent quote on KD. He said, I felt like I was the best option on every team I played for down the stretch. This is the first time with KD in my career where I can say that guy can make that shot too. What do you make of that?
I'm hoping that it was a way to get, you know, to bring him and KD closer. So give him a compliment for ego, because that's what I'm hoping, because, you know, you play with LeBron, K-Love, and in terms of making shots, I mean, J.R. Smith's probably one of the best guys to take a shot from anywhere on the court, and he can make it. So he's played with some other killers on the court. So I'm hoping that this is just part of Sean Marks and Kyrie's plan to get KD all together and make it a great kumbaya, because in Cleveland, we had some bad boys. Like, I mean, like, this guy's playing the finals last night, LeBron James. He's a pretty good player. So if I give him the ball, I'm pretty sure he'll make shots too.
I had the Lakers in five. I think it may be a sweep. I really do feel there's I think Bam Adebayo matched up great with the Celtics because they were a small team and he could concentrate on offense. I think Bam defensively now has to guard LeBron and AD. I don't think you'll get much offense from him. I think it's a problem they can't solve. I think we could be looking at a sweep. Your thought. What do you think?
Going into this, I was saying, because I respect the Heat's organization and I respect Spoelstra and Pat Riley, I was saying, you know, Lakers in six. But of course, if guys are not playing, if Dragic's out, that's a big loss for them. So then I move it down to Lakers in five. But I think I have Lakers win the first two games. I think game three, if the Heat want to win a game, and probably the only game that I have them winning, would be game three. They'll treat like their game seven.
Yeah.
And I think that's their one win and an opportunity to get a win instead of getting a 4-0 sweep. So I just have them getting one win. And just last night was just, I was really surprised and shocked how much size was a factor in game one. Of course, Lakers aren't going to shoot it as great every first half like that again. I know we've been talking about it. You know, we've tried to figure out, you know, who's going to make shots for them. So they were definitely clicking all cylinders first half. But I think, you know, the Heat can get game three. I think that's their one win they'll get in the series.
Tristan, absolute pleasure talking to you. 10 years in the NBA, 4 straight finals. We'll talk soon, my man. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Thank you.